This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. On June 27th, Rural and Regional Development Minister Dato Sri Shafi'i Abdal said that amendments in relation to the land ownership rights of the Orang Asli were at the final stage, which when completed would be tabled in Parliament. Amendments are being discussed in relation to the Aboriginal Peoples Act 1954, but how do the Orang Asli people really feel about it? Well, in the studio with me today, T.J. Yok Chopil. She's the Secretary of the Jaringan Kampung Orang Asli Semenanjung Malaysia, or better known as the Peninsula Malaysia Orang Asli Villages Network, together with the organization's legal advisor, Dr. S. Yogeswaran. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
And in between this interview, we also caught up with Senator Olian Abdullah, who's the Orang Asli representative in government, and we'll hear his voice during the interview. You know, TJ, I just want to find out more about yourself. I mean, where did you grow up? I mean, you were through and through Orang Asli.
Okay. Actually, I'm grow up in Bido, Perak.
All right.
And then, purely Orang Asli from Semai tribe. Then I get involved with this activism when I was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. After I finished my SPM.
Right.
Okay. So.
So as a you know, Orang Asli growing up in Bido, you had access to education. You went to school.
Yeah. Actually, in this case, it's quite good, you know, because most of the children in our village, we go to school. Mm-hmm. But for me, because in my village, we just started bring out from the village to the government school.
Okay.
In 1976, so that was I'm only 9 years old. Mm-hmm. So that means I have no basic
reading and writing skills. And you started school at the age of nine.
Yes.
What was that like? I mean, it must have been quite difficult for you.
Yes, I'm struggling hard because I very hard for me because I don't know how to read and write.
Yep.
So for me, that is a very terrible time. Mm-hmm. But I have to fight to reach that level.
And what about the rest of the people, you know, from your village? Did they all cope the same way?
No, that is the problem because some of us we're getting fed up, give up, because we cannot cope with the study. So we just drop by. But lucky, my parents, they keep pushing me. Mm-hmm. And try to to give me encourage me to just try my best to catch up
to
the studies. Yes.
Right. And then at the age of 18, you decided to become an activist. It's a very young age to realize that you wanted to be an activist. Why?
Yeah, maybe this is one of the problem. I always question to myself that why this going on to my people? Why we are so? I feel like something like discriminate. Even maybe the government feel they do not discriminate us, but for me as my as Orang Asli, I feel like something like we are very far from the others. Why?
Mm-hmm.
So
in what sense?
Yeah, like to attend to school. Also, I just go to school when I was nine.
Mm.
Actually, not only myself, but the other children in my village. We just started bring out from the village to attend the school. Only in 1976, you know, and then in others issue we are not really include like in policy makers in policies talk about the policies for our country and all that. We're not really invited to sit together to talk, you know, to make a decision and all that. And then when we face like land issue and others issue, we don't know where to go except to Jabatan Helewan Orang Asli, you know. We go to that department and just tell them what the problem, and that's all. We just need to wait for that. And then sometimes we always have no answer for that, you know.
Mm-hmm. So land issues is the priority, would you say?
Yes, because land is actually the basic of our needs, you know. Not only for the economic purpose, but for our culture, for our identity, for our belief, you know, for our practice of life, for our philosophy as a community, as a tribe, as a, how to say, as a, yes, actually as the Orang Asli.
Mm-hmm.
it's really related to the land.
Okay. Mm. And of course, that has been the major issue all this time. You had the Jabatan Haliwal Orang Asli, which is now known the Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli. Why the change? Would you know why?
From what I know, but it's not really told me that this is the reason. But what I heard from everywhere, you know, like they changed because the department thinks that they want to become a corporate
organization.
Agencies, you know, to develop the Orang Asli's land. Like before, they more focus on welfare of the Orang Asli. But now they just focus on they're going to focus on economic to develop the Orang Asli's land and all that. So that's why they changed to Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli. But actually, not the Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli. Mm-hmm. They said Jabatan.
Kemajuan?
The first one is not kemajuan. Badan kemajuan orang asli, something like that.
Okay. Right.
Kebadanan kemajuan.
Perbadanan kemajuan orang asli. Thank you, Yogis. I forgot too many things inside. So this is but after we said no. We not agree with that, you know, from the Jabatan Lewal Orang Asli, where the sound is very nice because like Jabatan is more protect and look after overall of the Orang Asli. But now you want to change to Perbadanan. How come to be like that, you know? Then they change to Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli.
Okay, Yogis, I mean, you know, anyone will think you Orang Asli. Your DNA is made up of Orang Asli. You feel very strongly for championing the rights of Orang Asli people. Why is that, Yogis?
I just feel that Orang Asli have been given the short end of the stick in this country, and having a human rights background, I feel very strongly about this. So about 6 years ago, 6-7 years ago, when I was doing my master's, I did a course involving indigenous rights, and I literally tripped over an assignment involving an Orang Asli case. And from that, just snowballed into what I do now. Mm-hmm. So there's no particular drama to my participation or journey, so to speak.
So how long has it been? 6-7 years?
About 6.5 to 7 years. Now, coming up 7 years.
How have you seen in terms of the welfare of the Orang Asli, in a legal sense, right? Okay, let's just move one step back. The amendments which are being proposed, and we don't know what these amendments are to the Aboriginal Peoples Act 1954. Would you know how this act came about?
Well, this act essentially is a product of British patronage and welfare in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. It started from the 1930s when you had the Perak State enactment for Orang Asli. And that was due to some very sympathetic colonials on the plight of Orang Asli and the fact that lands were being taken even then. Mm-hmm. And later on, after the war, there was additional, or let's just say added interest to the Orang Asli issue during the emergency, because the government felt that the communist insurgents had won over the hearts and minds of the Orang Asli.
Okay.
So they devised an Orang Asli Act to protect the Orang Asli, not only from the scourge of communism, but also to protect Orang Asli in terms of their land rights and other rights.
Yeah, they have very, you know, besides land rights, you also feel very closely to natural resources, fisheries, a whole load of things, really, but land being your biggest, problem at the moment. So now, you actually have a senator for Orang Asli, representative in government, and that is Senator Olian Abdullah. We spoke to him yesterday in Parliament. He's a very busy man, and we asked him about the role of the Department of Orang Asli Affairs, and this is what he said.
Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli is under the government. I'm not involved with their department. I'm representing for Orang Asli at the Parliament, at the Dewan Negara only. The Jabatan Orang Asli is head by the Director General of Orang Asli.
Who is the Director General for Orang Asli? And I understand your village heads play a very big role in this, and they call it the Batins, am I correct?
Some of the village, some of the place, they call Batin, mm-hmm. some of them call Penghulu or Ketua Kampung.
Mm-hmm. And they have a large voice as far as the Orang Asli affairs are concerned?
I don't know. Maybe their voice is only in the village, yes. They are in the community themselves, yes. Their voice is the main one. But in this decision making, they're not really a part of that, you know. But they just always just to come to how to say that, to prove that the Orang Asli representative is there, the leaders of the Orang Asli representative is there. So that's all.
We have about 600 Batins in Peninsula Malaysia. It's, you know, just around here you have 600. I mean, do they play much of a role, Yogis, in the Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli?
I think one must understand the background of the Batins. Batins, traditionally for Orang Asli, not all the Orang Asli subgroups traditionally have Batins as leaders. This is more common to Orang Asli in the south.
Okay.
In the north, they know, their decision-making system is communal.
Mm-hmm.
The British came in, passed the Aboriginal People's Act, as you know, in 1954, and established this Batin system, which essentially establishes a headman for each village. It's much easier to control people in that way. Now, this headman, it not only comes, and it has not changed much since then. He does not only come under the payroll of the Jabatan Kemajuan or the government. His appointment, his removal and selection is determined by the department.
And who heads the department?
And department is headed, it is a minister who determines on the advice of the of the head of the department, that is the commissioner for Orang Asli. The commissioner for Orang Asli is also the director general of Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli.
Mm-hmm.
And he is Dato' Sani Mistam, and he's not an Orang Asli.
Okay. Whereas, you know, Senator Olian Abdullah is an Orang Asli, am I correct?
Yeah.
He is, and he is your representative in government. Has that role, I mean, we've had an Orang Asli representative in government for a while, but has that been effective for the people?
As the committee of Orang Asli, myself, that is the problem we see in that, because even the senator itself, not pointed by the committee of Orang Asli, but mm-hmm. pointed with the executive, how to say, power?
Yes.
Of Perdana Menteri,
okay.
Prime Minister. So, actually, whatever things, like, let's say that Parliament session, we have the senator, we have never sit and talk what he will present, what are he going to present
yeah.
as the Orang Asli's voice in the Parliament. So we do not know.
There's not much consultation
no.
at all. Well, we asked him how he maintains his independence, and this is what he said.
Sometimes it's very, very difficult. So I got to be fair. And some because it's not all the government policies is good for Orang Asli. That's why we have one, we call it in Majlis Perundingan Orang Asli Kebangsaan. Some of the issues I raise up there, some of the issues concerning Orang Asli I raise up in the Dewan Negara. So I don't think it's difficult for me. I think it's okay. No problem. Nothing to worry. As long as I do my job, the important is what the issues concerning Orang Asli I raise up to the government. That's all.
There you go. Majlis Perundingan Orang Asli. What's that all about, you guys?
That is the government's version of consultation.
Okay.
But one must understand that the structure within Orang Asli society is not a hierarchical structure at all. Each local community decides on its own. So you can't have a particular group of people deciding, say, land matters, for example, on behalf of the Orang Asli. And secondly, he says that it's difficult to maintain independence. I agree mm-hmm. with him totally, because his appointment comes under the executive, and it's also a Yang Dipertuan Agong appointment. And what does that mean? He he may not be carrying the voice of the Orang Asli, particularly the grassroots.
So consultation is something else we spoke to him about. Should, you know, Orang Asli groups be consulted?
Of course. That must be the first step. Government must do it. Make it clear to all the NGOs of Orang Asli and the communities of Orang Asli, leader of the Orang Asli must clear, they must, the government must brief them what government want to do with the Act 134.
We'll come back and find out more about these so-called amendments. We're discussing the Orang Asli amendments to the Aboriginal Peoples Act 1954. If you have a question for either Tija, who's the secretary of the Jaringan Kampung Orang Asli Semenanjung Malaysia, or advisor to that organisation, Dr. S. Yogesuren, send us a text message. The number is 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi. There have been proposed amendments to the Aboriginal Peoples Act 1954. We don't quite know what it is. It was, you know, announced in June last year by the Rural and Regional Development Minister. Just to, you know, have a discussion on, you know, the Orang Asli people and their status. With me, Tija York Chopil. She's a coordinator of the Peninsula Malaysia Orang Asli Villages Network, together with the advisor, Dr. S. Yogesuren. Now, earlier on, we left off with the Minister, you know, talking about his role and, you know, his independence and things like that. But, and as you said, Tija, your key issue is basically land rights, right? I'm just going to play his response to key issues amongst the Orang Asli before I come back and, you know, ask you more questions.
The most important issues is one about education. And the second is about their standard of living. More than 50% of the Orang Asli is under what we call it below the poverty level. So government need to program or plan to increase their standard of living, especially for their income level. This is very important.
Would you agree with him? I mean, you're saying land rights, he's saying, well, education, standard of living, you know. What do you think?
For me, that I'm not so agree with that, because my stand is very, my stand, but actually the community stand is the land is the most important, the number one, the first one in our case. You know, because land is everything. How you can send your children to school if the parent have no place to stay, you know, have no land, have no resource to find, to make money and all that. You know, so I think, I'm not saying that education is not a problem, okay? All this education, poverty is a problem, okay? We need to solve that problem. But it's not mean that we must focus just one, like, let's say, just focus on education issue, but let's forget the land issue.
Yeah.
What is the point? Because without the land, how to think about children education, you know?
So it's the root cause, hard. The root cause of all of this is really the land. How we come back to the Act now. How does the Act govern your life?
No, in this case, is actually, we must understand that 134 acts, you know, the Orang Asli Acts is not suitable now for this time, for decision, you know, because it's like Dr. Yogesuren said just now, that this one just for during the emergency, during the colonial time, during the communist time. But now the time is changed already. We need something new, you know, something like the more protected to our right. But in the case now is like they said, no, they want to amend the acts.
Yep.
But the problem is we do not know what they
the proposed amendments
what
are.
They propose or how they propose, you know, the way they propose. They never sit with us, they never consult with us. They just bring, yes, got Orang Asli representative there, but it's not really the representative appointed by the community, mm-hmm. you know. Then and one more thing is very important. This representative also they're not very close to the community. They never sit and talk to the community. So how can we respect them to bring the community voice?
Right.
You know, to make the amendment is better for the goodwill for the Orang Asli. You know,
we asked Senator Olian Abdullah about the amendment.
The act was from under 1954. I think it's high time for government to amend back and to check back the act, because from the act, actually, for example, definition of Orang Asli is not very clear. For example, in Malaysia, we have 18 tribes for Orang Asli, but not stated in the Act 134. So that's why I think government should look into that, because we also scared it come up the 19th tribe from Orang Asli. That's why that is a few example the government should look into that act. And also the government should look into our land. But this is what a community of Orang Asli concerned about their land, because till today more than 80% land owned by the Orang Asli is not gazetted, because in the Act 134 is not mentioned about that. So that's why we need certain provision in that Act. It said that the land of Orang Asli must be gazetted.
Dr. Yogis, I mean, you've been working, you know, for 7 over years with the community. Does the Act have shortcomings? And, you know, based on what Senator has said, are these the areas that need to be looked into?
I think he has basically, in very basic terms, got it right, because the Act is very, very problematic. When the Senator says that more than 80% of the Orang Asli occupied land is not gazetted, It is actually it's the tip of the iceberg, because the government only acknowledges settlement areas, but not their complete customary land. The complete customary land, a conservative estimate by COAC, that is the Center for Orang Asli Concerns, is around 645,000 hectares. Government estimates are 145,000 hectares. What they may intend to gazette under a particular land policy, which was passed in 2009, which we feel will be part of the amendments, will result in the land maybe reducing down to about 100,000 or 80,000. So the Orang Asli will lose not only quite a large amount of their land,
customary land,
in exchange for a better standard of living. Why should they give up their lands for a better standard of living? They are citizens. And,
you know,
the problem lies in the Act, because the discretion whether to gazette a land or not lies in the hands of the state authority. And the state authority, once they gazette the land, is not what we call a reserve kekal or permanent reserve. It can be de-gazetted at any time without compensation.
From federal level or state level?
State level.
From state level, okay. Because I realize federal and state level, when it comes to gazettement of land, you know, there can be a conflict as well. State and gazette, government, federal may not, you know, and that sort of issue. When you talk about the welfare, the standard of living, you know, when Yogis, you mentioned just now, what does that mean to the Orang Asli person? I mean, relocating them, you know, and I think I've done enough shows on tribal issues. We always think that relocating the tribal people to the city and, you know, giving them homes is really the solution. It really is not the solution.
Yes, I agree that it's not the really resolution to solve the Orang Asli poverty case. Because for me, that now, yes, we call Orang Asli miskin, you know, miskin taka. But actually, if you ask me as the Orang Asli, I will say I'm not miskin tegar, actually I'm a rich person. I only not greedy, you know, because my resources is a lot in my wilayah Tanah Adat, you know, like kayu bala and all that. If I'm greedy, I can cut all the kayu bala. If I'm easy to get the permit, I can cut the kayu bala and I sell the kayu bala. I become a rich woman, you know.
You can exploit it.
Yes, but we are not. So we are not miskin tegar, you know, in this case. But we are not greedy. Once the second one is because whatever we grow up, we plan, you know, the government or the company from outside, they just come to our place and destroy it, and or just take it without any compensation, without any negotiation. How to become rich like that? And then that is the third one is, how come you say that if you replace the Orang Asli Komiti to the new place without their dusun, without their resources, just a house, and then you give a 99 years grant for the tapak rumah sahaja,
the lease,
yes, how they can survive, you know? I can't understand that government said this is the way how to reduce the poverty problem to the Orang Asli. I cannot understand. Mm-hmm. We always said, government, please, we want development, okay? Because we have a large of territory, okay? You can give project pertanian and all that in our own land. That's the way you can help us. You give us our basic need, kemudahan asas and all that in our own land, right, where we stay right now. It's not to the new place.
So what you need is infrastructure in your existing land so that you can work the land and earn for yourself.
Yes.
What about orang asli who want to come out, Tija, and, you know, live in cities and, you know, and different generations, that's going to be changing, like yourself.
No, but actually, for my experience, I see that I never see any orang asli who stay permanently in town. They just come to town just for work. After retire, they will going back to their kampung. They will build a big house in their kampung. They will not stay until die in the town. That is the real case. I don't know with the senator, but the others, academic person, professor and all that, after retire, they going back to their kampung. The first our first senator, Itam Wali, also died in his kampung. After retire, back to his kampung. The house in the town, they jual. You know, I never see that orang asli very love to stay in the town so far. And then let's say if orang asli choose the new generation choose that they want to stay in the town, I think that is their right. Also, we cannot say cannot, but that is, let us choose what we want. Don't push us to choose.
Right. Yogis, I mean, based on your experience working with, you know, legal issues as far as the community is concerned, I mean, has anything changed over time, 7-8 years? Any positive development?
I think that's a very good question. There have been very positive developments from one arm of the government, that's the judiciary. I've been personally involved, and I'm still personally involved, in a number of customary land rights cases in Peninsular Malaysia. We have had successes there. The highest court of the land, which is a federal court, has recognized that orang asli possess customary land rights over their entire customary lands, and the government, state government, need not even gazette those lands. All they have to do is actually demarcate and prove that they are the original people who have occupied this land. Now, the issue I think Jekosum has, that is Jaring Kampung, is why can't the government give effect to the court's decision? This is not one court decision. This is a federal court's decision, meaning to say that it is binding and has the force.
It should hold precedence.
Yes, exactly.
Which it isn't at the moment.
No.
Okay. Tija, do you think the Orang Asli have contributed to the history and culture of Malaysia in ways that, you know, the public really are not aware of?
Okay, in this point, how to say? actually, this is another case, you know. How to say that? First, let's say that what we contribute. Okay, the first that I think when we are not greedy, we not destroy the environment. That is one of our contribution to our country. Okay, the second one, like for the culture in culture issue. we are not really invited to expose what is our culture about, and how to say,
not enough.
Yeah, so so how to contribute, because they not respect us, you know, they not respect us in this, in this case. Like you see, during the going to have a pilihan raya, we just can see our orang asli face in the TV. Mm-hmm. If have no pilihan raya, no story of orang asli.
Yep.
So all that. So how to contribute?
So you appear during general elections, and after that, you're forgotten.
Yeah.
There was a protest in 2010. I understand, in Putrajaya. What was that all about?
Yeah, that protest is about the land policy that mentioned by the Dr. Yogesh just now, that also government make a decision and make this draft without the orang asli permission, without the orang asli consultation. So, and then in the land policy is totally is not how to say, for the goodwill of orang mm-hmm. asli. All is for the government side, you know, like we say, government in the policy, the land policy, they said orang asli just will be given just for tapak rumah, you know, for the and then two to six acres for acres, for economy, for the commercial
cultivation stuff.
But that one also is not belong to orang asli. The orang tengah, how to say,
the middleman.
The middleman will develop the land, and then the orang asli will just wait for the dividend once a year or everyone, I don't know. But you know, as general, federal said their standard is 2 to 6 acres, but depends on the state.
Right.
Then if the state said, we have not enough land, so our standard is 4 acres.
Right.
And then again, they go to the village. They said, okay, this penempatan, the kampung is so small, so now we have to divide to 50 families. So now the land will be
less and less.
Less than that.
Okay. We asked Senator Olian Abdullah about the protest.
So that's why until today, a few plane from government, it especially... what they raise up is about our Akta 134 and about our land, because right now I see about, I think it's more than 80% lands belong to orang asli is still not gazetted, and still that's why I think this issue is until today. This is need budget from the government. They must allocate certain budget to the Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli, make it a perimeter survey, and then the Jabatan must make an application to the state government. This government need to do. This is, I think, is very urgent for the Orang Asli. That's why if they don't settle this one, it can happen again. Sorry to say.
Dr. Yogesh, your response?
He's got a point in terms of the fact that a survey needs to be done, land needs to be gazetted, but that's only the first step in a very long process towards empowering orang asli over their own lands. Yeah. But this parameter survey can be very misleading. Because as I said before, if the parameter survey is conducted in a manner that only recognizes what the government sees as orang asli land, orang asli are going to end up losing much, much more land mm-hmm. than they already have. And this is a very, very big problem with orang asli, and they reject this. So this is another issue in dispute. You know?
We also asked him, you know, how then to address orang asli concerns.
Government need to engage, must have engagement with the orang asli, especially NGOs and the leaders from orang asli before they amend the 134X.
You know, we're running out of time, but in conclusion, he also recognizes that needs to be more dialogue between the people and, you know, government. Tija, what is your final message on the whole idea that there could be amendments? I mean, you don't know what they are. You know, if you have one wish, what would it be?
I just want to say that government, please, don't pass the amendment first. Okay, please come sit together to us. We never say that. Please stop. Don't do anything to the Orang Asli's Act. Don't make amendment. No, we never say that. But we said yes. This act we need to renew. You know. So please come sit with us. When I said us, that means the real Orang Asli, who really bring the voice of Orang Asli, who consult already the community of Orang Asli. So actually we can work together in this case for the goodwill of Orang Asli. If the government, in the our leaders in our country, they really wants to see that Orang Asli is part of the Rakyat Malaysia, you know, that is, they must do. They must respect us.
Before I conclude with Dr. Yogis, we asked Senator Olian Abdullah his achievements in his term, what he felt they were.
I think the significant, what I saw now, is about education. Before that, they don't provide a scholarship for the anak, for the Orang Asli further study at the overseas. Now, for example, this year, September this year, we send about 8 of the Orang Asli for further study overseas. That is very significant. Before that, I think we don't have.
8, dismal in my mind, but what do you think?
We are here to discuss land rights, but I agree with you.
But as Tija said, I mean, it goes back to land, isn't it?
And
how to move forward in, you know.
That's right. And education plays a role in increased awareness about land rights. Education also improves the position of the bargaining position of Orang Asli when they come out to engage with the government. And my last few words would be with regard to engagement. We are always, even the Bar Council is very, very, and this I can say, very, very happy to sit down and consult with the government on Orang Asli issues, provided they engage using international human rights standards for engagement and not selective engagement where they invite a particular group people and leave out another particular group. And that's quite important. I think engagement is a starting process. Education is also important, but should not be at the price of land.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. That was Antija York Chopil, who is the coordinator of the Jaringan Kampung Orang Asli Semenanjung Malaysia, together with the legal advisor, Dr. S. Yogeswaran, on the proposed amendments and the plight of the Orang Asli people in Malaysia on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.